good afternoon. It's great to have you here today. I'm Jeff Davis, and this is On the Wine Road.
We're trying to make the best product possible that we can possibly make. We're trying to educate people in the developing field of heritage cider. But more than anything else, we're hanging out, and that's huge.
I have something special for you on today's show. You'll get to hear about a promising product before it comes to market. It's the story of starting a cidery that's not going to be your run-of-the-mill cider. You'll meet Thomas Henry and Jason Thomas, the founders of Thomas Brothers Hard Cider. You'll hear about their nearly lifelong friendship, how they decided to start their own company, what sets them apart, and the many challenges they've been facing along the way. A pre-release party is set for June 14th, where you can taste their sparkling, yes, sparkling hard cider. It's all coming up. On the Wine Road is sponsored by Sonoma Clean Power, sourcing cleaner electricity and delivering programs that fit your lifestyle. Sonoma Clean Power, innovation grown locally. By On Fire Fireplaces and Outdoor Kitchen Showroom, a specialty store that focuses on beautiful fireplaces and outdoor living spaces for homes, businesses, and wineries. They're on Cleveland Avenue in Santa Rosa. And by Smothers European Volvo Cars and Mercedes-Benz of Santa Rosa, a family-owned business since 1982 on the Corbiato Row. Last November, I was at the Wine Expo in Santa Rosa, and while waiting for a seminar to begin, I was standing next to a guy who was wearing a hat that said, Thomas Brothers Hard Cider. I asked him about his company and didn't realize at the time they weren't releasing their product yet. I said to him I'd like to have him on the show. We were finally able to hook up in May after a few distractions in both of our busy lives. That also included the flood in Guerneville. Nonetheless, the necessary enthusiasm about their business has not waned. One aspect I couldn't pass up mentioning is that, aside from Mr. Henry's first name being Thomas, Jason's last name being Thomas, by chance, my middle name is Thomas. So, I couldn't pass up talking with these two.
I don't know if you know what goes into a name, but basically any name you could even think of making, someone's already got it.
Right. So we had I hear that a lot with winemakers.
We had the perfect name, and in fact, I'll explain this later, but we went to this cider startup workshop, and we were like, yes, our name is so awesome. And then we said it, and like, you know what, someone's already got that name. It's like, no way.
What was it?
It was Russian River Cider Company. Like, and there's, and actually the reason why there's no Russian River Cider Company that we know of, but there's Russian River Brewery, there's a lot of Russian River stuff. But what we were scared of is that there was a story about like a cease and desist letter of like someone's name that was like closely related to them. It's like, oh, we can't use that name. What do we do? Another person came up and said, you know what? Finding a name for your company is harder than finding a name for your child. And we're like, that can't be. Well, I have a child. And now I have a business, and I can tell you directly that finding a name for your business is probably one of the difficult things you can do.
Well, the fact that you had the same name, I think that works out well to be the Thomas Brothers.
Yes, I believe that's meant to be.
Right. You know, another good reason I wanted to talk with you is because I understand that you make some damn good cider. That's what your website says.
Oh, it's true. And you just drank a glass. What do you think?
Well, and it's early. It's like barrel tasting, like you said. But yeah, it goes down easy.
Yeah, so, I mean, a lot of people make cider, and there's different ways you can make cider. I think the typical way that people are used to like drinking cider is like you think Angry Orchard, you think Ace here locally, Strongbow, Hornsby. There's a lot of different ciders out there. Mm-hmm. And typically people will take like juice, probably dessert apples that are like in cold storage in Oregon, and then they just press them, make juice. It goes to the site. They pitch it. They make cider, they'll filter it, they'll back sweeten it or blend it, and then they're force carbonated, and then it's out on the market within 30 days. And that's kind of the typical like distribution model that you'll see.
And like what brewers are doing too, you can crank out beer every few weeks.
Very similar, but cider's different. There's different ways you can think about cider. You can think of cider like beer. So a lot of like people will drink beer, right, and they'll be like, okay, well, cider's like beer, right? It's lower in alcohol, it's carbonated. And it's refreshing, so it's like beer. But then you have other people like, no, cider's more like wine. You crush it just like a grape, and you ferment it just like a grape, and you need to age it just like a grape. And then you have more of a wine model. Which is like all the nuances and flavor profile and texture and all this other stuff that the beer drinker is just not really interested in. They're just happy that it's got some alcohol and it's got some sparkle to it and it's refreshing. And then there's other people that are like, no, we're cider. It's different than beer. It's different than wine. It's cider because it's made from apples. And fermenting apples is one of the more difficult things you can possibly do well. And that's the thing, is being able to define like what makes a good cider versus like not a great cider. It depends on who you ask. If you ask us, like we're kind of like, we're in the middle. Like we really fell in love with the apple. We came from, apple country. Like we grew up in the Russian River Valley, where we played in apple trees like most of our lives. And it's a very big proponent. You go to like Sonoma County, especially Sebastopol and the Gravenstein Festival, like it's just, that is like apples, and that's kind of where we come from. And so we want to pay homage to the apple, whereas we seek very interesting apples, like heritage apples, like Gravenstein. We have a single variety Gravenstein. I mean, that's the nearest and dearest to our heart. We have Newton Pippin, which is another like heirloom varietal that you don't see so much these days, but they still grow it in these areas. We're just really trying to go back to, like, almost turn back the clock to where cider used to be before Prohibition, because cider used to be like a really big drink here in the United States. Prohibition hit, and then ciders were out. And then wine took over after that. Like, you look at Sonoma County, like, used to be all apple trees. Now it's mostly all vineyards.
That's what I've heard, is that nowadays for cideries, it's hard to find enough apples to take your product to the highest level.
We even found in Sebastopol, someone had offered an old Gravenstein orchard that we passed on, but in the old barn there was a makeshift bootlegged cidery that obviously they were making stuff for alcohol purposes, hidden in the shed and stuff, and we're still trying to convince them to pass on the huge tanks, some of the relics that they're just, that are lost there. It was like a time capsule when we went and visited.
And the guy's grandfather or his father's grandfather, anyway, giant apple press, giants like fermenters and stuff that were just sitting there still, in relatively good condition because it's all super old growth wood. And we're actually looking to, when we get our tasting room up and running, like, procure those items and then,
like museum pieces?
Yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that's what we're trying. I mean, that's kind of what I think we're trying to do, is to pay homage to tradition, and tradition as in like the drinking apple.
Speaking of tradition, Jason and Thomas of Thomas Brothers Hard Cider decided to choose the champagne method to make their sparkling cider, which is the most complicated way to do it.
So you want to talk about that?
Well, are you ready to get into that?
All right, let's get into this. So making cider, like I said before, like there's a lot of different ways you can go about it. We decided, or maybe I decided, and I pulled Jay along with me, is that let's not just make cider. Let's make like the most difficult, the best, the highest quality thing we could possibly make, and so let's make champagne out of apples. And now some people have done this already, but it's few and far between that you'll have like method champenois that are coming from apples, because people don't think of apples as having the qualities necessary to make a really good champagne like they do grapes. Like, for whatever reason, like grapes have made it into like our current culture as like something that is like highly desirable, that has all these different nuances that you're able to get these great varietals from and make this great product. Whereas apples is kind of like just crush it, pitch it, and throw it in someone's mouth. Like, that's not really our style. Right.
Well, and I imagine, there are only certain kind of grapes that go into really good champagne and sparkling wine, Pinot Noir, Chardonnay, Pinot Meunier, and other varieties in other countries. But what you're doing, you can't just grab any apple either, I wouldn't think.
Yeah, one of the things is you can't have too high of alcohol content in there. There's a couple other things that bridge what is really preferred for champagne. And, we're still learning ourselves continuously. We're definitely producing something that we enjoy, and we're hoping someone else does.
You've been doing quite a few trials, too.
Yeah, definitely. So a lot of it's trial and error. There's a lot based on experience, and there's some stuff that we're running into that that we just have to make up on our own. And that's fine. I mean, that's kind of the exciting thing about this, is that it is literally an adventure, and it's day to day. So what we're doing is that we're taking these heirloom varietals, ones that used to be a big part of our community, like the Gravenstein. Like that's our premier apple that we're trying to debut, like within our product. We have a Newton Pippin. We have a Roman Zin. Basically, is what we did is we took a Roman Beauty and we aged it on Zinfandel grapeskins.
It's a 100-year-old orchard. It's a 100-year-old orchard. So you have some of that kind of like, you know, thought of, you know, the gnarly, kind of like an old vine Zin or something, where it's a concentrated fruit flavor and it's not preferable for market sales, but it has an intense flavor.
Yeah, my wife said it's more of a culinary apple. She'd heard of it, but I'd never heard of a Roman.
Roman Beauty or Red Rome existed, and it's a really red, like almost like a Christmas apple. They call it a Christmas apple because it's really red. It's a late harvest, so it's anywhere between like November to even December sometimes.
As you can hear, they have developed a passion for the cider business. But how did that come about? You'll hear what inspired Thomas and Jason, necessity being one of the reasons, when I continue with the story of Thomas Brothers Hard Cider, next on The Wine Road. You're listening to On The Wine Road here on KSRO. I'm Jeff Davis, and I'm sitting in a barn in Petaluma talking with Jason Thomas and Thomas Henry of Thomas Brothers Hard Cider. It's certainly an appropriate name. They chose to make sparkling cider in the method champenoise style, just like the French and Americans make champagne and sparkling wine. To start a business from the ground up, it helps to have a partner you can trust, someone you know well. They have that going for them.
Thomas Brothers is not just a name. Like, that's who we are. This is my best friend. Like, he is, you know, we don't have the same parents, but we were raised in the same house. So I'm Thomas Henry, he's Jason Thomas, and we've known each other since we were 5.5 years old. And we've always wanted to do something together, a project that we both shared common interests in. And this is the only legal thing that I think we've been able to decide on that we could actually do together. Thomas Brothers started like when I got let go from my job and Jay decided to quit his, and we saw an ad for Oregon State University cider startups. And it's like, you know what? Let's do this, because we'd been talking about it for a while, and I'd worked professionally as a cider maker for a couple years prior, different places, making other people's products. And it's great making cider, but it wasn't the way I wanted to do it.
One aspect of the story I don't want to leave out, because I thought it was interesting, is you used to be a home brewer, and your wife was part of that, and then she couldn't drink beer anymore.
Right. So we, big time home brewer, you know, come from a drinking culture, and it's one of those things that helps, I don't know, everything, in my opinion. Like, you celebrate the high highs, you grieve the low lows, but alcohol is always something that brings people together. And so I was a home brewer for a long time. And then my wife became gluten-free, so I was no longer a home brewer. It's like, well, what else can I do? And that's when, like, cider is like, well, I could make alcohol from cider. So went to Trader Joe's and got some unfiltered juice and made some really terrible cider. But then it was like, well, why don't I just go home and pick the Gravensteins on my house and go to Jason's place and pick the Graves at his place and the Dogo crabs and all that. So we ended up like just doing this big old picking party, grabbed all these apples. Like, well, what do we do now? So I had to make a grinder and a crusher and did it all in the garage. And I made some pretty good cider, and I loved it. I loved the process. I love going out into the orchard and picking from our own trees that we used to climb as kids. And something about it just made sense. It was just such a wholesome rural experience that I felt like it was like, if I didn't do this, then I wasn't doing myself any justice. And I get to hang out with my best friend again and be kids again. It's like, well, let's do this more often. And that became something we did, like, you know, for three seasons. We would go around.
On the phone almost every day now.
Yep. I was almost thinking, too, like, it's like the trees were calling you back.
Yeah, definitely. We enjoyed just, you know, that was our backyard was the vineyards and the apple trees. Just, you know, go play outside. And that was, you know, it wasn't a cul-de-sac or whatever else. It was out in the woods in orchards and whatnot.
And now you're out in the field again. You understand the benefits of the agricultural life.
Oh, for sure. I don't know if it's a smart decision or a not smart decision, but we want to actually get into the orcharding part ourselves because it's really important for us to do everything, to have a hand in everything that we're doing. As Jay mentioned, like it means so much more when you have your hands on every part of the project. It becomes like part of your lifestyle, and you gain a lot more respect for your craft. Like we're looking to pretty much go from literal ground to glass.
They're Thomas Henry and Jason Thomas, or Tom and Jay of Thomas Brothers Hard Cider. What's one way to delve into a new business? Learn from those with great experience. So that's what they did along the way to the Cider Startup Workshop at Oregon State University.
We did like an endless summer trip up I-5, hitting all these different cideries, like people that I knew, people I didn't know, like just going in and trying their product and seeing how they did things. Yeah, and like it was super awesome. Like by the time we got up to Oregon, like we'd been to like 12 different cideries, and our car was full of cider at that point. We did the week-long class and made a lot of friends and connections there. And on the way back, we went Highway 1 all the way down and got all these different ciders on the way down. By the time we got back, we're like, okay, we're doing this for real. And got some equipment together, found a shared space at the winery that we're currently working at right now, and built some relationships with some growers and got our hands on some really good apples. And I mean, we've been crushing and pressing and fermenting ever since.
The game is on.
Oh, the game is on.
One other mention for me was, you know, he'd been trying to convince me for 2 to 3 years to get onto this, and I was kind of suspect on it. I was like, you know, I'd love to hang out and stuff, but I don't know if this is a viable thing or whatever, because I have a little business background. I didn't even know that, you know, I'd worked at some wineries in high school and afterwards and stuff, so I was pretty familiar with Sonoma County and wines, and you know, my experience was, as Tom had said, you know, some of the more simple beer model kind of ciders where they were just kind of like syrupy, sugary apple juice. And when he made some of the stuff, he actually showed me that there was actual differences between apples. I was like, what? I thought an apple is an apple. And, you know, I could actually start to appreciate and actually see the differences. And we even, you know, we went on a scavenger hunt when we went to Oregon State, and it was really great for me because I didn't know that much. I just had his stuff and, you know, whatever you found on the market, on the supermarket shelf, which usually was less than premium. And so I was actually able to start distinguishing what kind of apple was in the cider. We even had a couple that had what we agreed was too much of a certain apple that it just killed it. And you know, like a year before that, I would have been like, oh, everything tastes like Mott's apple juice, you know. And then there was like, whoa, this is too much of this. And, you know, we liked, you know, a blend or so on and so forth. So it's been fun for me, too, to just kind of be able to learn and appreciate that there is actually a difference. There is a lot of, you know, complexity if you do it right. If you do it really quickly, like he said, that a lot of places do, it does lose a lot of the flavor. It loses a lot of the aromas. And if you do it slow, it actually, you know, we're going to try one after this episode here, and you're probably going to think there's some residual sugar in it, and it's actually just the nose of it that has so much floral apple flavor that when it touches your tongue, you're like, oh, there's a little bit of sugar in there. Nope, there's not one drop of sugar in there. It's all gone.
Is that the Rhone Beauty?
It is.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to tasting that you aged on the Zinfandel skins.
we got friends that are like, you know, they'll come in, do a barrel tasting, be like, dude, this stuff is awesome. You should do this right now. And it's like, no, it's not ready yet.
We pulled a couple kegs off, and, you know, I have a keg on tap at my house, and everyone's like, sell this. It's like, no, it's not ready yet. Sell this. It's like, nope, not yet.
But the amount of time it's going to take you for it to be ready versus the price point you're going to sell it for, you're going to sell it for the same price. It's going to take you like 6 months long. It's like, well, that's not accurate because it's not the best product. Like, you want good or you want best? I want best.
You want damn good.
I want damn good.
And to do so, they have quite a few hurdles to jump and learning curves to conquer. I hope you're enjoying hearing this story of two guys who are taking on a major project. Yep, there have been many surprises along the way, but they're still on the path. One of the hurdles is the lack of readily available supply. We'll touch upon that when I continue the tales of Thomas Brothers Hard Cider here on The Wine Road. Welcome back to On The Wine Road. I'm Jeff Davis, and today you're hearing the story of a startup, Thomas Brothers Hard Cider. I'm talking with Thomas Henry and Jason Thomas. One topic we touched upon earlier was the fact that apple orchards have diminished in the area here, being pushed aside for the more lucrative business of planting vineyards. For this interview, I met up with the guys at a farm in Petaluma because they're looking for a place to plant their own apple orchard, to which I said,
which means it's going to be, I imagine, a couple, 3-4 years before you're going to get much harvest out of that.
So 5 to 7 years.
5 to 7 years. So this is a long-term commitment.
Yeah. We're committing to it. I don't know if we've committed to anything, but we're in the process of committing. Everything, I mean, like, this project is an adventure, and it's been a day-to-day type of thing where you think you're going in one direction, and then life happens, and you got to go in a completely different direction. But one thing is true is that we're very committed to our philosophy. And the philosophy is that we want to make damn good cider. And we want to make it not in a way that is, it would be great if it was profitable. Like, we're hoping to achieve that point one of these days. But we want to make it in the traditional sense, bringing homage back to the way that things used to be, where slow and low was way better than like high and fast, as far as like fermentation or anything else. Like growing something organically has much more meaning and value than just trying to rip a product out of the ground and get it marketable and sold. So we're here for the long run. Like, it's really important to us that we produce a product that is high in value and gives back to the community. And that's something that is important to us. Like, we're here right now at our friend's vineyard, and we want to make an orchard here. And we want to produce apples that we're not going to be able to find anywhere else. So we can find the dessert apples, and we can find some heirloom apples. That's not a problem. But finding, like, bitter apples and bitter sharps and bitter sweets, there's different varieties of apples.
Sure.
So I don't know if your listeners are much aware of apples, but you have sweet apples, which are higher in sugar. You have bitter apples, which are higher in tannin. And then you have bitter sweets, which are high in tannin and sugar, and bitter sharps, which are high in tannins and low in sugar. And so, like anything else, generally a blend of apples is the best, kind of like in wine, where a blend of wine is usually far superior than a single varietal. Now, of course, single varietals are sexy. They're awesome. Like, if you appreciate anything out of, like, you might have like a single varietal and be like, oh my God, that's so interesting. I wouldn't drink a whole lot of it, but that's really, really interesting. Well, you take that little bit of interesting, combine that with something else that's equally interesting but in a different direction, and all of a sudden you have like this plethora of flavors and textures and overlap of like almost like a peeling an onion type of thing, and something like you put the glass down makes you think about it a while. Well, I mean, that's kind of what we want to do. So having access to the heirlooms and the sweet apples are great. Like, I feel like we can figure out ways to really make these products like desirable and great. being able to grow these other varietals that we don't have access to. Things like your Arlington Mill and Kingston Black and Golden Russet and Wixen Crab and all these other varietals that like we would have to either live in England or the Willamette Valley in Oregon or get concentrate too. I mean, that's another option, but it doesn't seem like that's the direction of our business.
That's not the natural way to do it, really.
Not so much. I mean, again, like if we were in for the money, we would definitely not be doing what we're doing. But we're kind of in it more for the experience, and helping grow the craft.
An interest in the craft, I imagine.
Oh, for sure.
And you guys, again, you chose the harder route, going with the method Champenois, which includes riddling the bottles, and that's time consuming.
Most definitely. We did. We increased how much we were going to do from our original plans, and then we did the calculations, and by doing it by hand and everything else was just not going to be feasible because we'd have to hire full-time people just to riddle the bottles and so on and so forth. So we've had to go to some mechanization and stuff. But, you know, we're still producing a great product, and, yeah, I'm going to be happy with it.
Well, yeah, it's the riddling by hand is kind of like the cork and the wine bottle. You know, there's a history, yeah. There's a romance about it, but you gotta be smart about it as well. And it doesn't matter whether someone's doing it by hand or if a machine's doing it.
We're even picking some of the blocks by ourselves. You know, with no other assistance.
More time consumption.
But at least you get a little bit more respect for what's going on, and you have a chain of custody from, you know, yesterday I was mowing orchards to get them ready to till them next week so that, you know, you can go through the whole process. So we're kind of dabbling and even, you know, working from an orchard all the way to corking and capping and all that other stuff for our own selves.
It's admirable how hands-on they want to be. You're listening to Jason Thomas and Thomas Henry talk about the deeply involved process of how they're making Thomas Brothers Hard Cider. Up next, Tom fills you in on their method, from picking, processing, secondary fermentation, and bottle aging. That's next on The Wine Road. This is On The Wine Road. I'm Jeff Davis. I imagine some of you listening are familiar with how sparkling wine and champagne is made. If not, and even if you are, Thomas Henry of Thomas Brothers Hard Cider is going to take you through their process of making sparkling cider. It's time-consuming, but it's what will set them apart from other cideries.
I think we talked about how the majority of cider out there is made. You get cold storage apples, you crush it, or you even like get it already sent to you in tankards of juice. You pitch it yeast, you ferment it, makes cider essentially, you filter it, you back sweeten it, you package it, and it's out in 30 days. And I think that's the current production model of cider. Whereas what we're doing is almost on the opposite end. We go out to orchards, we pick the apples of these specific varieties, we crush them, we're gonna grind it, press it. Then the fermentation, we want to control the temperature of the fermentation as much as possible so that it's fermenting very slowly, so that a lot of these volatile esters and fruity notes typically will get kicked out into the atmosphere if it's a very turbulent ferment. So we want to be able to control that temperature as much as possible to keep all of these really awesome flavors and aromas like within the juice. So then once we go through the primary fermentation, then we rack it into neutral French oak barrels. And what that allows it to do is it starts to round out the acids a little bit. So what used to be malic acid will now be starting to convert into a lactic acid with malolactic fermentation within the barrel because the barrel will breathe a little bit. So after like 8 months, we consider our base wine finished and ready for bottling. So then we pitch it with some priming sugar, we put some more yeast in it, we build a yeast culture, and then we bottle it. And then it bottle conditions for another 6 months, like at a specific temperature. And what that does is that the yeast is catabolizing the sugar with the nutrients and producing carbon dioxide within the bottle. So it's not able to escape. So it's carbonating itself within the bottle. And that's called, it's called Pet Nat or Method Champenois if you were to disgorge it. So some places will stop right there and be like, okay, we have the bubbles we want. They're nice, tiny little bubbles because there's no machine that's able to produce the tiny little velvety bubbles that yeasts can produce. But getting all the stuff out of the bottom, that sediment, like, that's super hard to do and expensive and labor, and we're not going to do that. Well, we decided, like, yes, we are going to do that because we're going to go the full distance.
Usually they call it a farmhouse when you just leave it at that point with a little sediment at the bottom. And, you know, some people go, okay, this is more of a handcrafted thing because, right, you know, it's not as refined or so on and so forth.
So then we have to riddle it.
And riddling is what keeps the yeast, the sediment, in one spot.
Right.
And then
heads down towards the
neck. So you want it toward the neck. And
so you can do it by hand. Like if you read in a romance novel, sounds awesome, where you take the neck, you put it into a riddling rack hole, and you put that at 90 degrees. And then every day or a couple times a day, you'll just give it a quarter turn. And as you do that, you pitch it up just a little bit until after 30 days, it's like 60 degrees within that, so that all the sediment will condense at the neck. And then you put that in a neck freezer, or you find a way to freeze the neck. So you make a little ice plug, and then you disgorge it, meaning that you take the crown cap and you pop it off, and then the pressure from that trapped yeast that catabolized all that sugar, making CO2, blasts off that ice plug, and then you're left with a naturally clear, filtered product without having to been filtered, and everything was done within that same bottle. And then you want to top off, and if you're champagne, then you're probably putting some dosage in there and some SO2, and then you cork it, cage it, label it, package it, and it's ready to go. And when I say ready to go, like, it probably was sitting on those lees for, like, you know, between 12 months and up to, you know, 10 years, depending on like how premium it is. With us, we're only going to let sit on the lees for about 6 months or so, because we don't really want so much of the, we're using like a very neutral yeast. So we're not trying to take anything away from the apples. We just want to enhance and add to it.
I'm looking forward to tasting that completed process version of your wines, your ciders. And Jason, is this something that you guys will do like on an annual basis, or does it take a little longer?
We're going to definitely do this every year. We're going to try to, you know, do some draft product also that's less labor intensive, but, you know, you got to pay the bills, and also, you know, try your best to do something that, you know, you feel that you could stand behind and not be ashamed to make. So that's why, you know, we're going to make the best draft we can, but then we're going to also make some love of the craft and produce something that probably is not even going to make any money, but it's what we want to make, and, you know, just explore and experiment and put ourselves to the test.
Yeah, I could see it in your brand of Thomas Brothers hard cider. Hard has double meaning.
Oh, yeah.
Most definitely.
We could pick the easy path, but then again, that wouldn't interest us at all. We wouldn't be in this business otherwise. It's definitely a labor of love. And this is a 16-month product. I mean, it's not for the faint of heart. This process is kind of redefines, like, a lot of the nuances of life, the high highs and definitely the low lows. We've had some serious lows in this business. But, you know, there are no highs without lows.
I'm sure everybody goes through that too, you know, whether you're making wine or beer, it's a learning process.
Yeah.
You never expect it to be as hard as it is.
You always go into a project, at least my experience, thinking of the end product, like how great it's going to be. And then you get into it, and the adventure takes you so many different places that by the time you're at your end product, you're like, oh my God, like, it's nowhere close to like what we thought we were going to do and what we thought we were going to experience. And we're better for having gone through it all.
I will say, they seem to have a healthy way of looking at the experience. I'll say this too, if you find yourself getting ready to enjoy a Thomas Brothers hard cider, you'll appreciate every sip after listening to today's show. You'll know more about that beverage than possibly any other. We talk a lot about wine on this show, but not quite in this much detail. I'll wrap up with the Pseudo Brothers next on The Wine Road. We're back on the Wine Road. I'm Jeff Davis, sending my best wishes to Thomas Henry and Jason Thomas on the future of Thomas Brothers Hard Cider.
Well, I just want to wish you guys great success, and it's going to be a long road. It'll be fun to follow your trajectory.
Yeah, I think we're going to have a good time, though. You know, I got good company, and we both have our back, you know, each other's backs, and you know, we talk every day, so there's a good communication. And Tom and I both spoke about, you know, we couldn't imagine doing this by ourselves, and we'd met some people that were cider makers that were doing this all by themselves, and they just looked so lost and hurt because it's overwhelming. They're, you know, like, it's 1% cider making, it's getting licensing, it's finding out you didn't get the right license for this county, or you know, you need to get, you know, something to ship or something else, and so it's a lot of everything. So being that someone has your back, and you guys both are in a focused direction, you know, if someone gets a little weak or tired, it's like, hey, I can't go. Okay, let me pick up some slack. And then the other person gets burned out, and it's like, okay, hand it off. You know, we had some issues with some of the people that we were working with, and it was like, I just can't deal with them anymore. And it was nice to be able to, like, hey, you pick it up. If it was just Tom or if it was just I, that might have been a roadblock, and it might just been the end of it. But, you know, we had someone to pick up where we left off.
It's taken a while. I met you back in November, so it's great to finally sit down with you. And yeah. I know you guys have been pretty busy since that time.
And, we are different. We're different now. I mean, the person you met back then was young and naive and full of, like, plans and expectations. The person you see now in front of you has been beat down quite a bit, but still young and naive and still has big plans. We're going one day at a time. And we realize that the finish line is never the finish line. There's just a point to go towards, and there's a lot of
North Star.
Yeah, there's a lot of adventure along the way. And what Jay was talking about is really the essence of it all. It's that we're trying to make the best product possible that we can possibly make. We're trying to educate people in the developing field of heritage cider. But more than anything else, we're hanging out, and that's huge. It's hard to find time for the important things in life, and having a best friend that you've had, like, since you were 5 years old, that you talk to every day on the phone and hang out together, like, that's few and far between, and that's the most important thing out of everything. So if everything goes to heck and we no longer exist as a company, it would have all been worth it, because I got to spend every day on the phone with this guy and every other weekend, like, just literally crushing problems and putting out fires. Because when you're in the alcohol business, maybe even especially the cider business, all you're doing is just putting out fires. Every once in a while, you get to make some good cider. But a lot of the times, like if you don't have someone that's got your back, that's picking you up when you fall down, like you may not be able to get up after a while. And so having this dynamic ability to tackle things together is huge.
We should all have business relationships like that. You can get details on their upcoming pre-release party on Facebook at Thomas Brothers Hard Cider Company. You can also read about them at thomasbrothershardcider.com. I hope you got a kick out of hearing about their trials and extraordinary experiences as they prepare to release their first batch in full later this year. That wraps things up. You can find my past interviews at onthewineroad.com. as a podcast on your favorite platform as On the Wine Road Podcast, and more on Facebook. Follow me on Instagram and Twitter at JD Wine Road. Join me again next Saturday for another adventure on the Wine Road. I'm Jeff Davis.